ॐ योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां मलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि. ऐ बौ टु दि एमिनेंट् सेज् पतञ्जलि हु रिमूव्ड् दि इम्प्यूरिटीस् आफ् दि मैण्ड् त्रु योग, आफ् स्पीच् त्रु ग्रामर्, and of the body through medicine. In our last class, we had seen that for the purpose of becoming expert yogis, we need to practice two things. What are they? The first is repeated practice, and the second is dispassion, abhyasa and vairagya. What did Sri Ramakrishna teach? Exactly the same thing. This summarizing the essence of Gita. Sri Ramakrishna says the essence of Gita can be summarized in one word. That is called Tyaga. Tyaga means dispassion. Dispassion means you turn your attention towards that which is the reality. He is not saying give up unreality. He is saying give up unreality. We think unreality is reality. That is the root cause of our problems. Now, somehow through scriptures, through the teachings of great souls, we come to know that what we have been considering as unreality so far, reality so far is really not real. So turn your attention. Swami Vivekananda makes a wonderful statement. Man is not traveling from the unreal to the real. He is always traveling from a lower reality to a higher reality. In fact, many times we discussed, there is nothing called unreality. Unreality doesn't exist. What is it then? What is that which we call unreal? Means partial apprehension or understanding of what is called reality. The famous popular Vedantic example is, you see a rope in semi-darkness, and what do you see? Snake. So is the snake unreal? Let us always remember, what we call unreal is always based on a reality. If there were to be no rope, there would be no snake also. But because it is semi-darkness, it is not fully light, there are similarities between the rope and the snake. So we mistake the rope for a snake. But when light is brought, the rope reveals itself. Where does the snake go? It doesn't go anywhere, because there was, really speaking, there was no snake at all. We were thinking the rope as the snake. Now we know this is not a snake, but this is the rope. This example, let us keep in mind, that is very important for our today's and maybe even future discussions. We have been discussing repeated practice, abhyasa. Sri Ramakrishna's one of the important teachings is abhyasa, repeated practice. What did he say of repeated practice? You are all devotees. So let us recollect, did he ever use the word abhyasa all the time? What is the abhyasa means, you know? Abhyasa means repetition. What is the abhyasa he was advocating? That every devotee must go on practicing, practicing, practicing repeatedly until it becomes our very nature. What is it that he was advocating? If you recollect, the five commandments of Sri Ramakrishna. What are those five commandments? First, remember God all the time. Why should he give such an advice? Did he ever give you an advice saying that you remember yourself? Do we ever forget ourselves? I am so and so. I am Swami Dayatmananda. Do I ever forget? Even in dream, I don't forget. So there is no need to advise that you don't forget yourself. So what is it he is asking? Remember God. Why is he asking? He is asking because what is the most, what is called forgotten object in this world? What is it? God. That is why it's always remember God, practice. But to help so that we can be established in ever remembering God, a time will come when we do not need to remember at all. Why? Because we become ourselves God. That's one. There is one word in the whole literature of any language which is the most used. Do you know what is that word? You know it. I, whatever language, even animals, insects, anything, I, even this table. Imagine this table can talk to you and you ask, tell about your CV. Then what do you think it will say? I was very innocent piece of wood until you stupid fellow came along and you took a chisel, broke me this way and that way, and now you see I have become limited. This is also an example we will shortly come across. Do you see the point? So, that is what it will say. I. What is the first thing that comes? I. What is the last thing? That is also I. But this I doesn't remain pure I. That's one of the subjects I am going to discuss. This is only what is called introduction. So this I, vibrating all the time, because so long as we exist, this I will be there. And when is it we do not exist? Ever. We exist ever. So this I goes on and on and on. But we mistake this I for something else. We do not know our real nature. So Ramakrishna advises, remember God. To facilitate this, we have to follow four more commandments. What are those? Second commandment, cultivate holy company. What does holy company remind you? God means what? Your real I. What is third commandment? Now and then, go into solitude. What the fourth commandment? Always practice discrimination. So what is discrimination? Whatever you consider at this moment as reality is not real reality, because that which comes, many times I said, whatever comes, that also goes. The body has come. A baby is born. Is it not foolish to think that the baby is going to live forever? We bless, you know, foolish elderly people like us, bless Chiranjeevi Bhava. In Sanskrit, you understand Chiranjeevi? Means live forever. He will curse you. If your blessing comes true, then he will be the first person to curse you. Let me live so long as I am healthy and happy. That is all. But what about, does he really feel like dying? No. Let me come back again. He will be feeling like that. So what is the fourth commandment of Sri Ramakrishna? Practice discrimination. Now there is something very interesting point here. That interesting point is, if you want to practice discrimination, there must be two things. First point is, it must be something is better and something is worse. So why should we practice discrimination if we have already got the better thing? Excepting a fool, nobody will exchange a better thing for a worse thing. But it is presumed, that we have already chosen that which is the inferior thing, and now we have, by through discrimination, we have to evolve into possessing that which is a better thing. The second point, Sri Ramakrishna specially emphasizes, he is not talking about hierarchical value. I told you, as a poor man, by discrimination he should become what? A rich man. That is called worldly wisdom. Acquire more knowledge. Acquire more wisdom. No. What has Sri Ramakrishna come to tell you? The whole world is telling worldly wisdom, giving us worldly wisdom, worldly advice. If you are having less money, have more money. If you are less happy, become more happy. If you are less healthy, become more healthy. If you are short-lived, live a longer time. This is not the advice saints and sages are born to give. This is not the advice scriptures are born to give. What is the advice they give? Give up the temporary, the unreality, and get the, what is called, real reality. That is the discrimination, Sri Ramakrishna, according to the fourth commandment. What is the fifth commandment? live like a maid servant in the house of a rich man. Very, I find extraordinarily interesting way of putting. Why did he not say maid servant in a poor house? Because the maid servant will have a natural dispassion towards a poor house. It is only in a rich house that the attachment comes. What is he talking about? You know, if you are very poor, then nobody will advise you to develop tyaga. Live like a maid servant means, however rich or talented or powerful you are, remember, there is one fact which has got equal-sightedness. What is that? Death. When death comes, there is no discrimination between a king and a pauper and a scholar and a foolish, illiterate fellow. Is a powerful man and a weak person, there is no differentiation between even an insect. There was a story, there was a great philosopher living in a kingdom. And the king was a very proud man. And the philosopher happened to be his advisor, family advisor. Many times the philosopher tried to give him good advice, but the king was so arrogant, he would not listen. But at the same time, he always asks, give me advice. Like our devotees, you know. give us advice. Every time they come, give some advice. And free advice, of course, you know. If I charge you for it, they will not come. So, the philosopher decided to teach him a lesson, if at all it goes inside. And one day, the king came to a crematorium, just by way. And then he found this philosopher. The philosopher knew that the king was coming, and he was there before the king came, and he was furiously digging the place and bringing out the bones. The king was astonished. The philosopher, what is he doing in a crematorium, digging like this? He was a very wise man. The king knew he was a wise man. But why is he doing a foolish thing like this? So the king went and asked him, sir, what are you doing? And then the philosopher said, you know, I am trying to find out what is the difference between the bones of a dog and the bones of a king. I don't know whether the lesson has gone through. What is it when death comes? Who is a king and what is a dog? What is the difference between these two? We forget, often forget, that this is what is going to happen. It is not something which may happen, may not happen. It is not a question of whether. It is a question of when. That is what Sri Ramakrishna always wants to remember us, remind us, then says, here is a man and here he is gone. Especially there was one occasion when an actor came, a young man. He acted very well. Next morning Sri Ramakrishna met him, or he met Sri Ramakrishna. And he was a good actor, sincere young man, and Sri Ramakrishna liked him. The Sri Ramakrishna had a theory, wonderful theory. The theory is, if any person can do something well, then there is hope for him. Anything. Funny examples come to my mind, you know. Swami Brahmanandaji had a devotee, an initiated devotee called Boshishen, a scientist, Jagdish Chandra Bose's assistant. So, Boshishen was very fond of Swami Brahmanandaji, his guru. And he used to treat him like his friend. So, one day Swami Brahmanandaji asked a Boshi, prepare a hookah for me. Hookah means, you know, for smoking. So the Boshishen had prepared. He was a scientist. Understand what I am talking? Scientist means hookah is prepared scientifically. It was just he brought. It was so perfect. Swami Brahmananji took one puff, and he said, Boshi, one more preparation of hookah like this, and I will give you Brahmagnana. What he is talking is, if any person can have this kind of mind, then only he needs to redirect it towards God and he would realize God. This is a lot of sense, common sense in this. We have to acquire that type of mind. That is why Sri Ramakrishna has given us these five commandments. What does a commandment mean? You know the Ten Commandments? What does it mean for a Christian? The Ten Commandments. It means, you must practice, go on practicing them until you reach God. When you reach God, you don't need to do it at all because you are with God all the time. That's what Sri Ramakrishna came to preach, teach, That's what the scriptures are there for us to tell. This is what we have been discussing. According to Patanjali, that we have to repeatedly practice. What is practice? The definition that we have given. So, dirgha kala takes a long time. And unremittingly, there is no holiday, there is no spiritual holiday. And with great love and reverence. The love means bhakti. You must not do it as a duty, must do it with great devotion. Then that practice becomes so automatic. And I give you some examples. If you don't brush your teeth, would you feel comfortable in eating? Like that, if you forget God, you feel a tremendous nushocha. You feel very bad if you do not think of the day, you do not think of God, do your regular japa or your regular parayana or study of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, etc. You feel very bad. But this every devotee knows this. But what often we know but we neglect to emphasize is, it's not merely these two. Any fool can do these things. Even tape recorder can do that. You know, you just put the mantra on a tape recorder. And also Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, you know, just as a funny example I will give you. You know, we have got Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. You can put it in your MP3 player. You put your mantra also inside that. And what is called loop, eternal loop. It goes on, Hare Rama, like Hare Rama chanting. It can go on doing it. In fact, many people do that, you know. It's okay, I have to repeat the name of God and I am busy, so I will put it on a tape recorder and I will repeat. Somebody asked me, so does it give me liberation? I said, I don't know about you, but certainly the cassette player will get liberation if you go on doing it. What is it that we are discussing? Abhyasa means repeated practice until it becomes a natural, a part of our nature. That is called habit. Habit means it is our nature. Just as I think I am so and so. I think I am so and so. In the beginning, was it like that? Never. You know, I'll give you an example. If you were born in UK, would you say that I'm an Indian? Now, even today, you can't forget you are an Indian, even you may be having British citizenship, etc. If you were not born as a Hindu, say you are born in a Muslim family, what would be your natural tendency? I am a Muslim. So, were you a born Muslim? No. Nobody is born either as an Indian or a Muslim or anybody. It is after birth, depending upon the parents or the place where we are, we acquire that what is called citizenship and religion, etc., etc. So also, when you say, I am so and so, before my birth, was I Swami Dayatmananda? When did I become Swami Dayatmananda? Only after I was born, is it? No, I was somebody. After I was born, I was somebody else. It is only in 1973 I became Swami Dayatmananda. And this is changeable. All the time it is changing. I was a baby, I was a young man, I was a middle-aged man. Now I am an old man. This also will change. So don't worry. Old age also will disappear. Let us not forget. Old age also will disappear. And again you will become young, baby, next birth. That is what Hinduism teaches, Buddhism teaches, Jainism teaches, isn't it? These are all the present identity should be changed until it becomes a habit. What Sri Ramakrishna calls? He divided egoism into two. The ripe and the unripe. What is the unripe ego? I am a man, I am a woman, etc., etc. What is ripe ego? I am not a man, I am not a woman. I am not a Brahmin, I am not a Shudra. I am not a Hindu, I am not any of any other religion. Sri Ramakrishna didn't explain in this way, but he would have explained to you if you were there in front of him. Then according to whom? Him. According to him, then who am I? I am a child of God. I am a servant of God. I am a devotee of God, etc., etc. I am a gnani. I am a bhakta. I am a servant. So, if I am a devotee of God, am I a Hindu? Am I a Christian? Am I an Indian? Am I a UK citizen? My citizenship belongs to whom? Citizenship means country. I must belong to some country. So, either I have citizenship of Vaikuntha or Kailasa or Goloka or Devi Loka, etc. There are also differences, you know, politics going on. Yeah, anyway, it's only a joke. There is no politics. There is only one Loka there. Because there is only one Loka, every devotee of any particular god or goddess or religion or whatever, they all go to the same place absolutely. This is the teaching of Vedanta, true Vedanta. Not that Hindus go to some other place, Christians go to some other place, etc. No. So this is what is called Abhyasa Vairagya. If Abhyasa is not, Abhyasa means practice, is not supported by dispassion, Abhyasa will not become established. If there is Vairagya, but there is no Abhyasa, that will also not be fruitful at all. So both must go hand in hand. And I gave the example of the lame man and the blind man. The lame man could see but can't walk. The blind man could walk but can't see. And both of them decided to go to a long distance, distant place. So how do they fulfill their purpose? They will put their hands on each other's shoulder, and the blind man will help the man to walk, and the lame man will help the blind man to go in the proper way. Abhyasa Vairagya. In that connection, I just left halfway through. The last aphorism that we discussed was Tatparam Purushakhyatehe Guna Vaitrishnyam. That highest, intensest stage of dispassion comes only when we behold Purusha or the nature of reality. Let me explain very briefly and move on further. Now, there are two types of progress. Progress within what we call, usually call, Maya. Progress within Maya, from a lower state of Maya to a higher state of Maya. And progress from Maya to Brahman or God. From, in the Patanjali's language, from Prakriti to Purusha. Advancement, progress within Prakriti, lower state of Prakriti to a higher state of Prakriti. And then the next step is from the highest state of Prakriti to completely something which is opposed, diametrically opposed, like light and darkness, from unconscious to the pure consciousness, from Prakriti to Purusha. We have to clearly understand. So until this subject of dispassion, there are two types, as we just discussed. And Patanjali says, the first type of dispassion is, because whatever state we are in at the moment, you cannot jump to the God or the Self. You will have to attain to the highest state of Prakriti, and then the jumping takes place. Let me give a crude example. Suppose there are two mountains, and a fellow is standing at the foot of one mountain. And somebody says that if you can jump from this mountain to the other mountain, then you will get a big prize. Imagine. So what does this person need to do now? Can he jump from where he is standing to the other mountain? What does he need to do? First he must climb to the very top of the mountain at whose foot he is standing. Only after that he will have a place to jump. What is called jump off point comes. That is what Patanjali is telling. You see, let me give you. We are going to discuss it in the next chapter, which is called Kriyapada, or practical part. The first chapter of Patanjali is called Samadhipada. Theoretical discussion about what is the goal of life. How many types, how do we understand it properly? Then only comes the practical part. Now we all know the practical part. Yoga in fact has another name. It is called Ashtanga Yoga or eight-limbed yoga. What are those eight limbs? Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana and Samadhi. Eight limbs. Do you think a person who is in this state, what is the lowest ladder, step of the ladder of this eight-limbed? Yama. Suppose somebody is in the state of Yama. Can he realize the Purusha? Suppose he is in the state of Niyama. It is like a steps of a ladder. In the second, can he jump off? No. He is in the third state, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh. Only when he reaches to the eighth state. But according to Patanjali, let me now let you into a secret. It is not eight really. There are nine steps. Nine steps. What is the ninth step? What is the last eighth step? Samadhi. What is the eighth last step? Samadhi. According to Patanjali, which we are going to enter, this is all introduction to it, Samadhi is of two types. Do not worry about the Sanskrit terminology. I will explain to you properly. Sampragnata Samadhi and Asampragnata Samadhi. Eighth is Sampragnata Samadhi. And what is the ninth? Asampragnata Samadhi. Or, if you are familiar, Savikalpa Samadhi and Nirvikalpa Samadhi. Does Savikalpa Samadhi give you liberation? It won't give you. It will give you highest place within this Maya, Prakriti. What is called in Vedantic language, Brahmaloka. But it won't give you liberation. But it will give you gradual liberation because a person who could reach that state, he is not going to come back. Next step is, his take-off point is from Savikalpa Samadhi into Nirvikalpa. At best, if he is a foolish fellow also, if he slips also, he will slip a few feet. Not from the mountain top to the foot. He will slip a few feet. But very quickly, he will take off from the jumping point and he will go into Asampragnata Samadhi. So the ninth one, we do not need to be so finicky about this terminology, but the ninth, it is for convenience sake, let us say nine steps. What is the point I am trying to make? That until we reach the eighth stage of yoga, it is impossible for us to get liberation. Even eighth one will not give liberation. That is also going to be discussed very soon here. What happens when a person stops in the eighth one? Says, Bhava Prakruti Lena. Either he goes to the highest loka or he is reborn again to enjoy the highest happiness in this world. But as I mentioned, not to fear, a person who had perfected his mind to such a degree, honed his concentration to such a degree, is not going to be like a stock and stone and again restart the whole process now. If he falls also, he will fall once or twice. As an example, do not take too seriously, about Swami Abhedanandaji and some other devotees, what did Sri Ramakrishna say? That he is a fallen yogi, yoga bhrashta, last birth. He could not reach, he was telling in a gentlemanly terms, he's not like me, in a crude manner he is not putting. He is telling, you know, last birth he could not complete. Like a father who is ashamed to tell about, you know, my son just failed, could not make in one subject only. What is the essence? He failed. Instead of saying he failed, which is a shameful thing, he just could not make in one subject only. Like that he is very polite, gentlemanly way of telling. Yoga bhrashta means he had fallen from yoga. And this would be their last birth. That's what Sri Ramakrishna said. So when a person falls, even Bhagavan Krishna tells in the Gita, when a person falls from the state of yoga, then he will be reborn in a most appropriate environment. And that again he will try, and maybe that birth he will go to God. God's grace will always be there. Do not worry. Coming back to our point, until we go through all these eight stages, it is not possible to attain liberation. That is why repeated practice and utmost dispassion should come. Now, what is the point we were discussing here about? There are two types of dispassion. What is it? From a lower state of nature to the highest state of nature, which is called Savikalpa Samadhi, still within Prakriti. That's why it is called Savikalpa Samadhi. Then only comes the last point, take-off point. That until then, it is not a take-off point. What is it? It is a gradual evolution from a lower stage to a
highest. But when it comes to asampragnata samadhi, nirvikalpa samadhi, then it is not a gradual progress. What is it? You totally discard whatever is happening there and jump off into a new type of reality. Let me also illustrate. Please do not mind, I have to repeat because these ideas are very difficult to grasp. Suppose you are having a dream. Imagine, in the dream, we are just like this. And you are searching for a job. Or you have a job, but you are not happy. Slowly you are progressing. You know, they are advancing you in your job. And you have attained to the peak of your line of profession. You became the highest. But your mind is, your heart is not satisfied. You want a takeoff point. What is the first part of your journey from a lower state of employment to the highest state of employment possible within the dream? What is the next state of development? Is a jump off point, takeoff point. What is that? From the state of dream, you come to the state of waking. Is there any comparison? Okay, he took one step further. Has he taken one step further in the dream state? Is there any comparison between dream and waking? It's like that. From our state within the prakriti or within nature, to attain to that state of asampragnata or nirvikalpa samadhi is like that. From a state, however high these 8 steps, they are all within the realm of maya or bondage. It gives highest happiness comparatively. But ultimately we have to jump off from that sampragnata samadhi. That is why it is called asampragnata samadhi. Even to be very harsh, like Gaudapada, he says it is not samadhi at all. Samadhi is state within maya. Then what is that state? It is not a state at all. In various languages, it is called turiya. It is called the fourth state. It is not fourth state. Because it is not like this is one, this is two, this is three, and this is four. It is not four states at all, fourth state at all. It is no state at all. It is the reality. From the musician produces wonderful things. However wonderful, what are they? Unreal. Who is real? The musician alone is real. So if the audience realizes that the musician alone is real, who is in this case, in this analogy, this Sri Ramakrishna gives, who is in this analogy the musician? God. But from the Advaitic point of view, who is the musician? Myself. What a wonderful thought it is. Let me briefly dwell upon this. The highest type of dispassion can come only when a person has a glimpse of reality. That reality, in Patanjali's language, is called Purusha. Remember, let us remember, according to Patanjali, there are two realities, eternal realities. What is it? Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha is the soul and Prakriti is the, according to him, not according to Vedanta. So, Sankhya evolved further, became Vedanta, and we are interpreting according to Vedanta. According to Vedanta, Purusha or Prakriti is a lower state of Purusha, partial reality. As I mentioned, there is no unreality. Maya is not opposed to reality. Maya is perceiving reality in a limited way. That's why I'm repeating so many times, otherwise there is a chance for misunderstanding. Who tells that? I'm not saying. Sri Ramakrishna says. What is it? He gives the example. There's a huge open space and there is a big curtain in front of you. And then there is a small hole. How much can you see on the other side? A little bit. And you go on enlarging the hole. As you go on enlarging the hole, you get better and still better, larger view of what is on the other side. So this progress from the lower step to the eighth step is to go on enlarging the hole. But however much you enlarge, you should never forget, your view is getting larger, no doubt about it, but there is a separation between you and the open space. There is a curtain, still there is a curtain. But a time will come when the hole is so big that you can just straight away walk into that place. When you walk into that place, then you see this vastness. That is the, what is the taking off point? You make the hole large enough. See, what is Sampragnat Samadhi? In this analogy, make the hole large enough. But don't go on looking from this side. What do you need to do? Just go through that hole, stand on the other side. Then there will be no separation between that open space and you. Ever analogy is limited. So what we understand, what is that open space? It is your true nature. Until this time, your small ego is perceiving it in the form of God or Guru or whatever. But now you see, I am that. So what does the Guru do? If you are fortunate, if you are fit, then he will go on saying, Tattvamasi, 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 thou art that, and you become, understand it deeper and deeper and deeper, and then a time will come, even if the hole is big, until you take off, you jump and go to the other side, you are still in the realm of Tattvamasi only. Guru is separate, teaching is separate, I am separate. But the moment you walk through, then there is no separate. Then what do you say? What does the Guru say? Guru doesn't say anything. Because Guru is left behind. What do you say? Aham Brahmasmi. See how wonderful it is. Aham Brahmasmi. That is what you say. And what about Prajnanam Brahma? Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahma. It is a human expression. When everything is one, the word I and everything doesn't gel. You know, I am everything means I am myself. There is no everything there. It's a human language. Okay. So, how do we get to that point? When do we become dispassionate? Again, let me give you the analogy. In dream, suppose you are very hungry. You are very, very hungry in dream. And you see the most delicious food kept in front of you. And then you are about to eat in the dream. And suddenly some big noise comes and you wake up. And you find yourself very hungry, very hungry. You know, often what happens in dreams, depending upon our state of the body, the dream also changes. Have you noticed? If you are hungry physically, in dream also, you often feel hunger. Yeah, so, or if you are thirsty, or if you have to go to toilet. Now you are very hungry, and you are about to eat, and you get up, and still you find in waking state very hungry. What did I say in the dream? Very delicious food. But when you wake up, that you are living alone, you are a bachelor or bacheloress, and you cooked food 3 days back, and there was a little left out in the fridge or whatever, and you go. Now, which is more valuable? The food in the waking state or the food you have seen in the dream? Which is more valuable? That is the difference between the value of reality and the value of unreality. So far, we are thinking these highest value things, money and sex and enjoyment things, etc. We are running like mad people. So what is vairagya, dispassion? Dispassion is, true dispassion can come only like this example. Do you need to practice dispassion towards the dream food after waking up? Or does it naturally disappear? What do you say? Why? Because there is no comparison between reality and unreality. Anything, smallest thing in reality is a billion. There is no comparison at all. Times more valuable, is it not? Value always depends upon our state of mind. This is an important law. I won't dwell upon it now. But I will give an example. And supposing you are a rich person. So like you say, billions you have. And you are walking in a desert. And you are extremely thirsty. You didn't have water. You are about to die. And you meet somebody who has got one glass of water. Now, which is more valuable? That glass of water or all your millions? This is only a comparative way. This is what Sri Ramakrishna is telling. In his own unique way, he says, even if a man has seen God, a glimpse of God, that bliss which he obtains is a billion times more than anything we can imagine, not really get and enjoy, but we can even imagine. So that is, there is a takeoff point comes, and that is called Sampragnata Samadhi. But to attain to that Sampragnata Samadhi, we must go through all these, how many steps? No.
No, no. Seven steps. You see, I want to pull your legs also. Seven steps only. Because what is Sampragnat Samadhi? Which step is it?
Eighth
step. To come to this eighth step, you will have to leave behind seven steps. So, Abhyasa and Vairagya, they belong to these, what is called, preparations. Preparations. How wonderful is Sri Ramakrishna illustrates this. Now, there was a very rich man or a king. Sri Ramakrishna gives the example of a king. And he was gracious enough to a poor man, because the poor man was very loyal to him. The king loves him. So the poor man one day, with great humility, says, I would be feel very fortunate if you visit my house. And because the king knows the devotion of the servant, what does he do? He says, what does he say? Yes. He says yes. And the poor man is very happy. He is besides himself with joy. Then the king says, someday he will fix. I will come to your house. Now, mind what Sri Ramakrishna says. What does he say? 2 days before the king arrives, the servants of the king come there and all the roads are cleaned, the house is cleaned. One day before the king arrives, all the, you know, the chair where he sits and the utensils, cooking pots, the cooks and the provisions, everything will come. And a few hours before the king arrives, the cooks start preparing everything. And what does the poor man need to do all this time? He can only, with folded hands, tears, he says, king is coming, how blessed I am. Then the actually king comes and the poor man takes him and says, please sit on this chair. Whose chair is that? And please eat this food. Whose food is that? It's a beautiful analogy that is Sri Ramakrishna gives. If a devotee is very sincere, he's not talking about how rich, powerful he should be. Sincere devotion, if it is there, then God will visit that place, the devotee's house. What is the devotee's house? The heart. He will visit. Then before visiting, the heart is full of, you know, poor house, there is no equipment, etc. What does God do? First, he will send clean. That cleaning process is called Yama and Niyama. And then he sends the cooks and other things, provisions will come, chairs will come, and everything will come. The other steps are there, you know, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, all these steps he will send out of his grace. And then actually the king will come. See, Ramakrishna has many ways illustrated it. Another way he illustrated is, you know, just before the rise of the sun, what comes? The whole eastern horizon becomes red. This is what is called Aruna. Aruna, Surya means the Surya, the sun has not yet come up. But the whole eastern horizon has become reddish or pinkish, whatever color. It is called the dawn. If you see in anybody, when you see the dawn, you know, even nowadays here in UK, when you see early morning you get up and then at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock nowadays, you know, you open the curtains and you look. I never close my curtains, you know, because the moonlight also has to come for me, not only the sunlight. I never close my curtains, always open. So, you see, oh, today is going to be a good sunny day. And even that, seeing that, your heart becomes changa ho jayega, isn't it? You feel very enthusiastic. Have you not noticed? And then, what does that mean? Very soon, the sun is going to rise. Sri Ramakrishna gives this example and says, if you see any person in whom there is tremendous shraddha and bhakti and humility, etc., and detachment, etc., you know, very soon God realization is going to happen to him. But what is the point I want to discuss today and finish it in this class is, you will never get that supreme detachment or dispassion until you have a glimpse of the reality, until you wake up. What is the value of your dream until you wake up? Tell me. Again, I will revert back to that analogy. In the dream, you are a prince, wonderful prince, and you are really enjoying your life. And if somebody comes and teaches you dispassion, then you will be laughing at him, isn't it? What do you want me to give up? I have wonderful family, wonderful children, princess.
and I am the emperor of this, and my people, my praja is good, there are no enemies, and this is what is called heavenly life for me. Do you think he is going to have dispassion? No. Then you wake him up. Then do you think he will have dispassion to that kingdom or not? Do you see what I am talking about? Do you think about wistfully and say, oh, that wife was wonderful, that husband was marvelous? No, you won't think like that, you know, because there is no comparison between reality and unreality. So, however dispassion we might possess, until we have a glimpse of reality in the form of the Purusha, our dispassion will not be complete. We can fall at any time. Sri Ramakrishna gives in so many examples, you know, while describing the Kundalini. He says the mind goes on from the lower chakra to the higher chakra. And even if it reaches the heart, there is a chance of its falling down. Then from the heart, it goes to the Agna chakra. It is called Agna chakra. If it falls, at best it can only fall to the heart, but no more. But still, it is within the realm of what he calls Maya only. Then he says, sir, what is the last chakra? It's called, I will tell you about it. He couldn't tell, as you know. He could never say, because it is indescribable. Until then he could describe. Then he says, I see God as a person sees lamp through a hurricane. But you put your finger to come into contact with the flame. Can you do that? Why? There is a glass case. But the glass is so pure, so clean, that you don't see any obstruction. Like, you know, when I went to Geneva, in the old house, there was a huge glass door. It is so beautifully arranged, a huge glass door. And outside there is a what's called patio. And from there you could see the lake, Geneva or Genova, whatever name you call it. And one day I saw it from inside the room, and I rushed and bumped myself into the glass. Like mosquitoes, you know, or moths dashing against the glass case. You know, you think that I was a fool, because it is, the whole thing is glass. It is so nice, so thin, that you don't realize that there is a glass, like Duryodhana falling into the Maya Sabha. You know, you understand? Duryodhana was seeing that newly built Sabha by Pandavas, Khandava Prastha, and where there is water, he thought there was no water. And where there was no water, he thought there is water. You know, this is, illusions can come. It is like that. Then Ramakrishna says, I see God like that, but still there is a very obstruction, very thin obstruction is there. I can't become one with him. And that state you can never describe, because you can describe only in duality. You can't describe in non-duality. Why? For the simple reason. Why? You know, two friends were talking, and one fellow said to the other fellow, I don't answer foolish fellow's questions. The other fellow said, why? This fellow kept quiet. I can't tell, because it's state of Advaita. State of Advaita means non-duality means what? Who is going to ask and who is going to answer? So that is a state that is called reality. Until we have a glimpse of it, when we have a glimpse of it, like a moth jumping into the flame, we have no choice, as though something is like a powerful magnet is attracting us. Helplessly we fall into it. But until that time, it is what we call human effort, self-effort. But once we have a glimpse of reality, we just fall into it helplessly. And what does that mean? That means, I won't even think, just as you don't think about the dream objects. You don't put a backward, I wish. You will not do it. You will simply forget. Why? Because there is no comparison between reality and unreality at all. That is what in this aphorism it is said. When an aspirant attains to that state, at least a glimpse of reality, then that intense dispassion, para vairagya, supreme detachment, naturally, automatically comes to him. And until that supreme detachment comes to a man, he can't take off. Like a glue, we will be glued to this mayic reality. That is why Gaudapada says something wonderful. Even very advanced people, Bibhyati yogi, Bibhyati is frightened when he talks, when he comes to know about Asparsha Yoga, he calls it, non-dual realism. Because that is such a frightening state, as though, as if I am going to lose my individuality. This happened to somebody also whom we know. Remember, Swami Vivekananda, Narendranath, Sri Ramakrishna, he went and boldly questioned him, have you seen God? Not only have I seen God, but I will also show him to you. That was not the occasion. Second time or third time, he touched him casually. What happened? The whole room was going round. Have you noticed? The whole room goes round. Have you ever seen the room going round anywhere? Actually, who is going round? What is going round? My head is going round. But I feel the whole world is going round. He said, sir, I have my parents. What are you doing to me? That was, you know, Bibhyati. Sri Ramakrishna then, you know, he touched him and said, all right, not now, when you are ready. And it took him 4.5 years to be ready. And then he panted and he got the realization. When he was ready, Sri Ramakrishna wanted to give, but he could not receive it. But when he was ready, then Sri Ramakrishna instantaneously gave it. These are all deep mysteries. What is the mystery? Did Narendra get Samadhi by himself? No. You know, somebody went and reported to Sri Ramakrishna. Narendra is in a strange state. What was Sri Ramakrishna's remark? He said, he pestered me for this for a long time. Let him enjoy it for some time. Do not worry. I will bring him back. Because he who has given can also take back. That's an entirely different subject. I am only introducing, because from the yogic point of view, it is you who have to do. From the Vedantic point of view, you cannot do it. You can do the negative things. You can't do the positive things. I don't want this, and that you can do. But I want this, that can be given only by God, the grace. And that's what Patanjali also tells within the next few aphorisms, which we will come. Ishvara pranidhanadva, or by surrendering oneself to God, and by His grace we will get it. These we will discuss. And the next aphorism is a most difficult. It is about Samadhi. I am only giving introduction. The Samadhi is of six types. Or first, it is two types, Sampragnata and Asampragnata. Savikalpa or Nirvikalpa. And this Sampragnata is of four types. And these four types is subdivided into again another four, two. That means six types of Sampragnata and one type of Asampragnata. How many types of Asampragnata? Only one. How many types of Advaita? There can be only one. So I will give you that a beautiful introduction I have prepared. But this is all introduction for that first pada is very difficult pada. Let us understand it thoroughly and then we will proceed further. In fact, if we can understand another 3-4 aphorisms nicely, after that it is smooth sailing. As Sri Ramakrishna says, when the boat launches into the ocean, the waves would be very, very heavy at the point of the shore. But once you go a mile or two, then it becomes much more smooth. That's what he said. And I was thinking, it's wonderful. But he did not tell all the hurricanes and storms would be there, starting only there. But we will take his words for granted. His grace will be there. We will discuss these points in our next class. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.